Thanks for joining us on this sixth episode of Propelling Breeze podcast. My name is Brian Bunker, 737 captain for United Airlines, national SPSC Go team assisting Breeze. And again, I'm here with Alex and Mark, and we wanted to just do a deeper dive into the transition. And I believe you mentioned to me earlier today, you wanted to talk about home basing?
Yeah, that's right. We did start talking about the transition and maybe expectations people had and the difference in between the company approach to industry standard. And so we precisely had that challenge being in Section 2 negotiations, like Mark pointed out, versus Section 6. And therefore only are able to make, at the end of the day, suggestions. And the idea we had, through the help of our ALPA staff here, from economic and financial analysis, as well as our labor relations council, was an idea to have all pilots home-based during the transition. This is done at certain carriers. It's actually an industry trend, and the carriers that are doing this are actually seeing cost savings with the way that they move people around. Now, we looked at this and said, this is actually a great idea for the transition. If everybody was home-based, you could still bid into a base that your seniority could hold, so seniority is being honored. And if, let's say, in summer, you have more flying in a certain base than in the winter, and your seniority does not hold that base anymore, then you flow back into the home base program. And so the worst that can happen to you is that you're home based. It would reduce the levels of reserves required because you could utilize the home based pilots for that. It would obviously greatly improve the quality of life of commuters. But there's also a potential benefit to the company, one, during the transition, because during the transition you're going to be overstaffed during certain bases, in certain bases, due to the way that they are transitioning and going base by base. And instead of having to TDY these people to different bases or sending them on reserve assignments to different bases and so forth, well, that's already creating a cost that you can offset the home base program with. However, that's not the only benefit. Long term, if the pilots indicate an interest in this program and we see that this is working financially for the company, it would actually be a way to accommodate the unique shift that Breeze has in their flying. In the winter, there is more south north-south flying, and in the summer, it goes to east-west. So there's a different need for staffing in the bases. In a system like that, where you're home-based, the most senior guys, nothing changes for them. They stay in their base that they live in and that they're bid in and their seniority can hold. The folks that are not as senior can possibly hold that base during certain times of the year. But again, the worst thing that can happen to them is that they flow back into the home-based program. Benefit for the pilots, benefit for the company. At this stage, it's maybe one of the only things we can do in order to get the company to buy into these types of proposals, showing them, hey, this is actually a benefit to you, and we could collect data points on this and then design a system that works for the future and our expansion, because we're like, hey, we did this during the transition, kind of like was almost cost neutral because we would have TDY'd anyways. And now we found, hey, this is actually to our benefit, like some other companies have seen. So we proposed this idea to management, and they definitely showed an interest in it. And we are wanting to refine this. Economic and financial analysis is going to build us a model based on our basis, and also based on the data that is coming back, will be coming back from our survey, as far as like what gateway city would you prefer, would you even want to have a home-based program, and so forth. And then we can refine this model and present it to the company. That's the kind of negotiation we're engaged in as far as like these immediate issues that we're facing. But the much bigger issue, of course, is always going to be the CBA. Once we have a CBA, that's when we become the union that we're meant to be, and we can enforce that contract and then engage in a completely different kind of negotiations going forward. So that is a big difference, but it doesn't mean that we're inactive right now. It just means it's a different type of negotiation, and it has a lot more to do with convincing, but it also has to do with, you know, pilot unity. If we continue on this great path that we are on right now with 70% membership and people wearing their lanyards and their pins and getting more and more united behind us and realizing that they will never achieve anything of substance through a pilot call, but only through a contract. And that is happening right now. People are starting to realize that. Once we have that, even those more informal negotiations where we don't have the power of a legal contract behind us, even those would become easier for us.
Absolutely. So going deeper into negotiations, Mark, would you like to give us a recap of negotiations up to this point?
Yeah. We've just entered our second year of formal negotiations. We started in January of 23. However, the first 6 months that most pilots will know, either through word of mouth or through our communications on the Parley newsletter from negotiations committee, that there was a lot of start and stops in the first 6 months. We had personnel changeover at high levels of the company. John Varley was here, then gone. So he was the primary negotiator for the first few months. That position was vacant for quite a while. And then we finally got Paul Carlson in the summer. And we started to work with Paul, and we found Paul a good person to work with. He had a lot of experience, you know, over decades of interactions like that at his past airlines. And we did sign our first TA with Paul. But then, unfortunately, about a week or two after that, Paul departed the company. And when we were, again, you know, kind of starting over again. But since that time, we've started to work with Mike Werger. He's the primary negotiator for the company side. He's assisted by the Mark Tenney from People. And both of them have showed us that they're good people to work with, and we've signed nine more additional TAs. I believe that was probably from September through December. So we made a lot of good progress, and then of course the holidays hit, and we backed off negotiations to the first of the year. And we did present a couple of new sections here recently on leaves of absence and sick leave. We're waiting for a reply from the company on those two responses. But then the big thing that happened was the transition plan kind of hit us, and we spent a lot of time, you know, trying to work through concepts and ideas and proposals and subproposals to the company. And I do think we were very successful in that. And to a large part, you know, they did recognize finally that it wasn't fair for only a certain segment of the pilot population to have their seat lock removed, you know, out of seniority order. Alex, what was some of the other benefits that you saw coming from that, that, you know, mainly was the impetus of ALPA pointing out, hey, you know, there's better ways to do this?
I think so, because it's not only the formal negotiations, but it's also our communications that go out, separate pressure being applied from the pilot group themselves, reaching out, creating a sort of atmosphere where it was very obvious to the company, okay, well, we're going to have to, first of all, base protect the people that were not able to bid for a base. I mean, whoever heard of that? You're not allowed to bid for a base in a certain bid because you're not in that base that is transitioning right now. So those guys gonna be at least base protected. And then the bypass pay, they agreed to that early on. I feel also due to, in part, pressure from communications and just conversations in between pilots that are maybe based on our communications that, you know, enabled us to get the bypass pay for people that were not able to bid. And then when we were in negotiations there in Salt Lake City, remember we got a very significant win by having the company agree not to start the bypass pay at the legacy pilots, but move it down because they already pay protected. So they already get that benefit, but to start further down the seniority list with the most senior non-legacy pilot. So the whole schedule of bypass pay therefore starts significantly earlier. So that's a nice benefit right there. And then I think the other main thing that we drove home was the whole issue that on the 190, some guys just fly 20 to 30 hours. And if they had been able to transition over to the 220, which would have been their right due to their seniority that they have earned, they could have upgraded like a half a year earlier. And at least the company side understood it and why that is a concern, and that means tens of thousands of dollars lost to those pilots. Now, are they going to do anything about it? That I don't know. But at least they understood the issue and understood that, hey, okay, well, that's a very significant harm that is done to those pilots. And let's discuss if maybe there could be some sort of bypass pay for those two, maybe based on when they normally, based on some average hour or something like that calculation, you know, start a bypass pay for them. I don't know if there's appetite in the company to do that, but those were the things we proposed, and at least there's understanding there. And then, of course, the big one was the home base idea, which would solve the seniority violation that the base-by-base approach introduces. So I feel those were like the big points for me, Mark.
Yeah, I agree. And also the home basing, you know, you've spoken to it previous as well, but this company wants to be nimble and flexible and flow and ebb and, you know, like you say, moving north to south and east to west. And, you know, they've also famously said that, you know, hey, if we put a route out and it doesn't work out, we'll pick it up and we'll move it to another route. And the funny thing about this, it wasn't intentional, but it just really seems to fit not only the transition plan, but also the culture and the goals that Breeze has seemed to express. Even when we start doing international flying, if you have international flying, say, going out of the Northeast, you know, that's going to be a certain season of the year, and you're going to have international flying going out of maybe California or Provo down to Mexico, and that's going to be a different time of year. And it just gives the company the way to be very nimble and flow their pilots throughout the country based on the needs of the company. So that's one of those things that I don't know if we'll get anywhere with it. You know, there was interest, but it certainly seems like it's a very appealing proposal for all parties involved. And if it's financially within their goals as well, then it's just almost a no-brainer.
And not to mention, you know, all those benefits, but also the goodwill that it creates from the pilots, you know, and the company.
And not only goodwill, but also retention and attraction. You know, since the beginning of the company, one of the biggest buzzes on the internet was, oh, wow, this new company, Breeze, offers home basing. Now, people that are in the know, like myself being home based, know that it's actually a very small group within the company. But the buzz that provided for the company as a recruiting tool was tremendous. And I've challenged the company often or proposed, you know, as a corporation, you know, every airline's, they're very similar, you know. To have a point of difference is important, I think. And Breeze needs to think ahead about what will make us different than other companies and what, you know, to help us with recruiting and retention. And I think that could be huge for them if they wanted to go that route.
And I think that's a really important point, Mark. So far, I feel there really was not a lot of energy expended on the company side to let's have a long-term plan. How is this going to really succeed, you know, over the course of many years? How can we get qualified pilots to apply here, stay here, make this their home? And you're absolutely right. I feel if you have at least a component, a home-based component, that could be very attractive. And of course, the opposite is true right now. We're changing the rules. You don't know what it's going to be. Promises, people feel promises are broken. And so probably don't recommend to their friends to come here. And of course, we want the opposite, right? We want people to come here and enjoy Breeze and the lifestyle and have different options and at least have some sort of like expectation. If I stay long enough, I can be maybe in the home base program or I can do this type of flying. And again, that only can be achieved through a CBA, because otherwise it could be taken away. And so therefore then it would be meaningless for your career planning if you don't know that that is something that you can count on.
Well, that's an excellent point. Mark and Alex, thank you again for joining me on this sixth episode of Propelling Breeze podcast. Until next time.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, thank you.